yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost, and this is why blank lost. Oh baby, this is why blank lost.
Welcome back to Why Blank Lost for Big Brother 24. I'm David Bloomberg, and with me, of course, is my co-host, Ovi Kabir from Big Brother 21.
Hey, David. As always, happy to be here. Thanks for everyone joining us. I cannot wait to get into it because this is going to be an incredible Why Blank Lost episode.
It is. It is. Now, in case we have any new listeners or viewers, a quick reminder slash explanation of what we do here. We look at all the information about the evicted player from TV, live feeds, interviews, finally have an interview, and anywhere else we can find. And then we compare how they did to a set of guiding rules for winning that I originally wrote way back in 2004 and have modified a number of times since, with the most recent version posted at robhasawebsite.com/bigbrotherrules.
Yes, and for anybody who's new joining us to kind of get an idea what Why Blank Lost is and why it's a little different than other podcasts or episodes or videos, what we do here is essentially do a deep dive into why the house guests this week left. We go into game theory, talk about through these rules, what went wrong, why they went wrong, and then we also talk about what happened to house. We try to stay away from spoilers, so if you're just a episode watcher, this is a good place for you. Regardless, we break into it. So if you love figuring out why this person went home, we're the place for you.
Yes, yes. Now, just to clarify for anyone, like I said, we will talk about live feeds. So if you just watch episodes, you're going to get more information than you get from the episodes. What we won't do is talk about anything that happened since Amira was voted out.
Yep.
So that's where the no spoilers come in. Now, also, before we get to the rules, as always, we'll discuss some things about the week in general. But, I mean, really, Ovi, I don't think anything interesting happened in the house this week, do you? There's pretty much nothing going on.
It was a boring week. I think everyone was really nice to each other. Not much happened. Well, I wish that was... I wish they were nicer, but I'm also very happy it was an exciting week because it was not a boring week at all.
Yes. Yeah, this was a week that many people have hoped would happen, but seemed like a pipe dream. And I'm not just saying have hoped would happen this season. I'm talking about 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, we often wonder, we complain, why are the people on the outs or the bottom of their alliance not realizing where they stand and turning things around? Why are they just marching to their own inevitable eviction? But no, this season, they realized it. They saw where they were and they said, we have to do something.
Exactly. For so long, we're always either yelling at our TV screens, whether you're inside the Big Brother house or outside of it. You want the outsiders to come together, create an alliance, and fight against the people that we don't really like very much. And this season did that.
Yes.
Which is wild because it's been a 180. This week was a true 180 from where we started this season. And where David and I, if you go back and watch the past Why Blank Lost episodes, we were like, oh my God, what is going on? Is this how the season's going to happen? But it changed this week.
Yeah.
David, why don't you tell us how it changed?
Well, I mean, so many things have changed. And it's funny because so often the big majorities that everybody is rooting against are the male muscle alliance. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, the women need to get together. This time we're like, yes, go men, turn it around. And two of the people who had some of the, I'll call it worst pregame press, have also helped turn it around. And it's, you know, it's just very interesting how quickly things change, how much they can change. And Big Brother, the TV show, actually did a decent job of showing us what happened. Now, was it perfect? No, because for 2 weeks, they didn't really show the bullying that was going on. So in order to make this week make sense, they had to cram a lot more in, which means other stuff got left out. For example, they left out Joseph's 25th birthday. Joseph like when he had his birthday, it was like, bing, a light switched on. And he was like, I'm 25 now. I think differently. I see things differently. Oh my gosh, I need to flip the game. And he, you know, yes, Kyle did a lot, but Joseph also was a huge driving factor in putting together The Leftovers, not to mention the way he reached out to Taylor with such compassion.
Exactly. I think this week was really fun to watch because I think we saw players play the game in a strategic, smart way that was good for their own game, while also were compassionate about factors that really didn't matter about the game. I think that's what I love. We saw people be themselves in a way where they were caring for others, but also making sure they could play the game and do it. Because for so long, we see so many house guests justify their bad behavior within the Big Brother house because they say it's gameplay, it's for my game. But Joseph, Kyle, they showed, even Turner this week showed that you can also be not a half bad guy and also play the game strategically, which I love seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, now on the flip side, we still had, of course, the bad behavior with Daniel and Nicole mm-hmm. being primary among them. The interesting thing is they even left out another big Nicole blow up when she got mad at Alyssa, stormed out, went to lie down in the hammock in the backyard, fell off, got back in it, fell off. I mean, how do you not show comedy like that? I mean, come on. Now, maybe they'll put it in Sunday's episode somehow. Maybe mm-hmm. they'll save it for a clip show. I don't know what they'll do, but I wish that would have been there because Nicole needs more, you know, to be shown completely falling like that.
I think we're going to get plenty of Nicole content that makes us laugh even more. Side. One thing I will say also about Joseph, they say, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, you might know better. Studies show that a male brain continues to grow till age 25. So when Joseph proved that's right. that theory, when it was 25, he's like, I'm changing the game in a way best. That's best for me and others. And I think shout out to the production team. I think knowing firsthand too, that there's people who are recording behind the screens who are actually rooting for the house guests they're videoing. And so for them, it makes it so much easier when the narrative is something they can craft where it's actually a good narrative and it's mm-hmm. a good story versus having to film, quote unquote, the villains of the season and show them kind of dominate, steamroll. This way, I think they had fun with it. And I think we kind of saw that from Big Brother's side. They really tried their best to really not wait till the end of the game to show that some people aren't the best characters. They're showing right. it now. They're showing how the gameplay is there. This is the Big Brother that we love to watch.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Now, on top of all that, from our own personal standpoint, for the past 2 weeks, we've mentioned that our winner picks were in very shaky positions. But hey, they're both in The Leftovers. We can both breathe a little easier for now.
Exactly. I mean, it was nice to not have worry about them Thursday night that they might be going home. Because they didn't touch the block. They didn't go, or they didn't, right. they got themselves off. Well, Brittany yeah. got herself off the block. But yeah, I think a very big role reversal and any bets put on them now might pay off, actually.
Yeah, honestly, I would bet at this point, if I were betting between the two of them, I would bet on Taylor. I would bet on your winner pick before my winner pick. But
It's close. Oh, and just for any of the viewers who didn't see, David's winner's pick was Brittany, and mm-hmm. mine was Taylor.
Yes, yes. So moving on from that, I had referenced that finally there were some interviews with Amira. Well, with a player, and in this case, it was Amira. And while she was not perfect in them, she was a hell of a lot better than many players when they come out, and certainly better than Paloma and especially Pooch had been acting on social media. I mean, Paloma never should have come back to social media, both for her own mental health and just, you know, because she shouldn't have. Pooch, I mean, I guess there was never any doubt that Pooch was going to be Pooch on social media, but he's being ripped apart by like last season's house guests when he's saying things like, oh, they don't show you everything. And they're like, dude, we were just there. You can't say that. Stop it. But meanwhile, Paloma came out. She owned up to her earlier behavior, agreed that the bullying had gone too far, and did not try the stupid claim of we don't see everything. So I was just so happy to see that part.
Yes. Yeah. You mean Amira, right? Correct.
Yes. Amira.
Yeah. Amira. Yeah. No, I agree. I think unfortunately we're seeing some of these Paloma and Pooch coming out of the house, really doubling down and saying that you didn't see everything. And this is a very classic justification we see from a lot of house guests afterwards. And this is something I always say that I think it's, as a house guest who was in the house, where I think it's really funny thing to say is that even though maybe the viewers didn't see everything that was going on, all right? They didn't see, there are a few moments, I would say maybe 5% where they close down the feed, things like that, especially the first week if the feeds aren't on in the beginning,
right,
you know?
Right.
Feeds were on from the get-go in this season. Yeah. But also, the viewers see literally 1,000% more than the house guests. So this idea that the viewers have a less accurate perception of the house guests versus that house guests themselves, because we're only seeing it through our eyes. You guys are seeing it through four different cameras going on 24/7 every room, basically. So it's just laughable. And I will give props for Amir that she was the one who basically didn't use that excuse in any of her interviews, which I was so thankful to see. I think she definitely had a little bit more of a media sense of things of how to respond. I think maybe because usually when you get off the show, they kind of give you the spill. So they give you a 10-minute spill, like, hey, this is things that went wrong. This is something we want to prep you. I think potentially, and I don't know how it went around with Paloma's situation because of her unexpected departure, as well as with Pooch. He had kind of, they did a late episode, so maybe they didn't prep him as much or in a different way. But I think by week three, they knew the narrative they're going to go forward. So they told Amira, hey, this is what you probably need to watch out for. And also, I think the interviewers were like, hey, you're going to get a lot of questions by A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. You should answer them now. And so I think she was smart enough to understand that maybe the tides are turning.
Yeah, I also think it's something that we talked about back in, I think, the first week, where I mentioned, you know, you can give people all the training you want. If they're not willing to learn, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I think Pooch has such a high opinion of himself that whatever they may have told him, he's going to just go out there and say what he's going to say. And I think Amira is definitely more open to education. And, you know, just in general, I think she's also, I mean, we'll talk about it more. She did make strides in the house. She was not perfect. By no means am I saying she was perfect. And again, we'll get into that. But I think she started to see more of it in the house, so she was better prepared for that. Pooch, I mean, his excuse was, well, even though there are live feeds, you don't see every conversation in every room every time. Okay, tell us exactly what it was that we missed that totally turns you into an angel. You tell us what we missed there that completely changes our opinion of you. Yeah, they got nothing. You know,
No, they don't. And I think, I think it's a good point to say that it's a different comparison when we compare Amira to some of the past other house guests who went home this season, because I think one, Amira is a little bit more open to maybe understanding the perspective of the viewers who felt the way they do about what happened in the house. But also, I think we did see this week where she was starting to feel, and I think the show might have given her a better edit in certain ways too, where she talked to Nicole saying, hey, I think you might have misinterpreted what Taylor said in this situation, which we'll kind of go into a little bit more, or talking to Daniel about, hey, like, I don't know if that was the biggest, you know, I think she, I think another week given to Amira, I think she would have probably been more receptive in working with Taylor versus these first three. So we unfortunately saw her demise come before she really could kind of maybe work towards that versus I don't think either of the two house guests who went out in the first week, whether they were gone week two, week one and stayed to the end game, I think their behavior might've continued in that shape or form.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Is there anything else you want to discuss before we get to the rules?
I think let's get into the rules because there's a lot to talk about.
Okay. Well, before we get to them, I do want to mention that the Survivor version of the rules come in a shorter and much more colorful version in poster form. You can see it behind me and on the screen right now. You go to robhasawebsite.com/yxlostfeed, scroll down to that poster and click on it for ordering. In addition to the poster, we have other ways you can get the rules, so you could always have them with you. There's the poster on a t-shirt. There is the checklist on a t-shirt. You can get it on a mug, you name it. And, you know, sweatshirts, although we're not really in sweatshirt weather right now, but whatever you want. So again, go to robhasawebsite.com/yxlostfeed and, you know, go crazy.
Yes, I love this merchandise. And as the weeks go by, it's going to get even more relevant. I think we're going to need soon enough a Big Brother version of the rules of Big Brother in this type of art
stuff. Well, I don't know that we can get Eric Reichenbach to draw another version. So that was an Eric special there. So
yeah, we'll ask. Very nice. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Amira said both at the end of Wednesday night's episode and to some players on the feeds that she thought Big Brother was going to be hard, but it was really easy. As it turns out, not so easy after all. How did she go from being the organizer of a blindside to getting blindsided herself? What were her biggest mistakes? It's time to figure out why Amira lost. The first and most important rule is, of course, to scheme and plot. Amira certainly made alliances and started doing it from the get-go. Looking at the alliance map created by Dolphica Johnson, and I hope I pronounced that right. I only normally see it on Twitter, where that is at Dolphica. According to that, Amira had been in no less than 5 alliances, some of which I'd forgotten even existed. So she had the right idea in that area as far as it goes. Some may say she went a bit too far, but we'll wait until rule 2 to discuss that and see if we say the same thing. Until then, we can at least say that Amira clearly had allies all over the house.
I agree. I think that if there's no other house guest that was scheming and plotting as much as she was, essentially, she was, if you do a Venn diagram, it surrounds Amira. I mean, what happened was essentially, and I don't want to talk too much into rule 2, but her scheming and plotting was what caused this major alliance to arise of the leftover. So, I mean, she had a game plan in mind, which I did appreciate, that she had a certain way. She went into the house knowing exactly how she wanted to have the strategy go along. So kudos to her.
Yeah. I mean, she came in wanting to align with the girls, the women. Mm-hmm. But more recently, the most significant alliance she had was Pose Pack, or at least, you know, she thought she did. And this was the main reason she was so certain that she would be staying in the house and so surprised when Julie showed her that several of those supposed allies were in the leftovers. What she didn't realize was Pose Pack was not a pack anymore. It had disintegrated. I'm sure she will be quite surprised to find out that Joseph led the charge in out-scheming her. But then again, maybe she won't be surprised because she had suspected him of plotting with Taylor before he was actually plotting with Taylor.
No, exactly. I think it was a self-fulfilling prophecy where she had it in her mind something was happening. And when you have something already in your mind that's happening, even if it hasn't happened yet, it starts to influence because of your actions when you interact with people, how a potential outcome, it could happen actually.
Right.
Here's the thing is Amira is it's no question that she's a very intelligent person. And I think one thing that I enjoyed seeing, it kind of played against her eventually, but she tried to really utilize game theory in the sense that this is why she was so shocked when they were actually voted her out. Why would these boys vote me out when it's in the best interest in their game that I'm here? Because we are in this alliance of post-pack without realizing that there might have been other factors to benefit their games.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's something what we will definitely get to is she was missing that piece there. But before we get to that, I do want to say one funny thing is that when Amira actually needed to be plotting the most, although it probably wouldn't have mattered, but she basically stopped. after she was nominated, she made a comment about how there was less strategizing going on now than there had been before. And she needed to realize if people are not plotting with you, they are very likely plotting against you.
Exactly. And I think one thing with that is that, and it's difficult because it depends on the player you are, right? Mm-hmm. There are certain players who are able to kind of do a lay in the field and die method for when they're on the block. They want to roll over because they want to minimize their threat level.
Right.
And there's, you know, instead of coming over confidence or try to scheme a little bit more, because the more you scheme, it might work against you. I remember when I was on the block against Kat Dunn, that me trying to fight my way to get off the block kind of hurts me a little bit more, because she wasn't a threat at that point in the game because she was just kind of chilling. So instead of that moment, you want to take a shot at somebody who might be scheming and plotting a little bit more. So, but unfortunate part of that is when you're already viewed as a threat, like Amira, if you don't scheme or plot, it just hurts your game. Cause like she did last week where she take a shot at Pooch, which like, it's an obvious decision. She kind of alluded to that happening to her this week.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, we can move on to the second rule, which tells players not to scheme and plot too much and to keep their scheming secret. As we've already kind of hinted at in the first rule, you know, there's some things to discuss here. We know she made alliances, a lot of them. And yeah, it's just possible that she went too far. All right, it's beyond possible. It's a fact. I found it really funny when Julie was interviewing her. And this goes back to what you were saying. So it was after the eviction, showed her who was in the leftovers, and Amira said, but they're in different alliances. As if she wasn't in a bunch of different alliances herself. You know, she told Mike Bloom that when she saw the faces, she felt almost kind of sick because she'd given them information and they took it and formed their own alliance. That's not exactly what happened. They got information from her and other sources like Alyssa. And put together the whole picture. But that picture had Amira in more than just the Pose Pack alliance with them. You know, one major thing that precipitated the formation of the Pound and the leftovers was Alyssa revealing the existence of the old school alliance, which hasn't even been mentioned on the show. Although, confusingly enough, the official Big Brother Twitter account included it on their alliance map, which was missing some other alliances. So, but yeah, it goes back to, you know, what you were saying.
Yeah, I think what we just saw was that a lapse in judgment that people could be playing the game a little better than her. And I think that was the issue. She thought she had it mapped out. She thought she was insulated, which you want to insulate yourself because you want to make sure that if you are leaving the game, it'll be detrimental to your allies' game. So that way they want to keep you as long as possible. Right. That's kind of what we break down here. That's the goal for the winner of this. But the issue is that when you leave the when other house guests realize that you leaving the house might not be detrimental to the game, that's when you might be walking out. So you need to make sure that your value continues, not just week one, not just week two, but into week three. So I think she didn't scheme. She schemed a lot. And then, like you said, this last week where she went home, this week she went home, and she didn't scheme enough because she didn't remind the players in the post-pack alliance why it's so integral that we stay together. She just assumed that she had their allegiance without working for it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Now, another difference is between her alliances and the leftovers is that the latter group kept it secret while information about her obviously got out, specifically the information that she was the one pulling the strings. You know, we heard over and over again, people called Amira the head of the snake or sometimes the head of the dragon. They wanted to make sure to target the lead person. And if you look in rule two, one specific corollary says, if any alliances do get out in the open, do not let it be known that you are the decision maker. But people found out, specifically the guys who were searching for who led the charge to vote out Pooch before the leftovers even formed. And, you know, that was when Amira came into the spotlight. And sometimes she even hurt her own cause, such as when I believe Joseph said she got sick after Turner won HOH, and she was saying she knew she'd be a target. Well, why did she get sick? Why would she know she'd be a target? You know, 2 + 2 = oh, she was the one who led the charge.
Exactly. I think she really wanted to get a resume quickly. She wanted to cement that she was an impact maker in this house. She led the charge for Pooch last week. And really also, instead of letting other people take the credit for this move, she didn't make it a secret that she was the one who led the stampede against him. She wanted to be known to both the viewers as well as to her alliance that this is what's the right move. We should make this move just to get threat out. But that was week two. This was pre-jury. So you don't want to do these types. You want to manage your threat level into it. So unfortunately, the worst person to be able to, for her, one HOH, Pooch's best ally, and then she made it such a point that she was the one who led the charge. You know, it's a bad combination that really led into week three, all the factors, because otherwise she mentions it in one of her exit interviews, I believe with it was with US Weekly, where she says that if I didn't do this move last week with Pooch, I don't think I'd be sitting here.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, yeah, she, you know, that was part of her scheming and plotting too much was, you know, basically being the puppeteer. And, you know, now she also had a few other things going against her in this rule. I mentioned in the first rule how Amira might be surprised about Joseph because, or might not be surprised because she suspected him of, you know, plotting with Taylor. But really, you brought it up. We have a self-fulfilling prophecy. Part of the reason she became the target was because of the way she was always swooping in as soon as she saw people having a conversation. She repeatedly grilled Joseph whenever he spoke to Taylor. And we, you know, saw her on the prowl looking for someone to question.
Yeah.
To the point that I think it was certainly known to the players. It may have even been like a running joke with some of them. Like, you know, I think the night that they were trying to get Taylor up so that they could introduce her to the leftovers and bring her in, they were like, oh my gosh, we got to avoid Amira, you know? She basically had no chill.
She had no chill. She walked around the house in a very controlling position where she felt that she had the autonomy to do this. And I think here's the other thing. When I want to go into rule three, but into week two, when you're over scheming, plotting, you use contrasts, I feel like. When you look at the strongest player in the house and the weakest player in the house, and this is not by any means say this is the weakest player in the house, but the way they all ganged up on Taylor made Taylor seem very vulnerable, very innocent in a position where she was just getting so much thrown at her into a contrast of Amira walking around the house saying, how could people be up so late talking, you know, well, let me be part of it. So you start viewing these people. She's going so hard against Taylor and this other group of people versus her. It makes her stand out way more because she's coming so strong against a player who really has no autonomy at that point within the house. And so she didn't just build up her threat level and over scheme. She made sure to make other players look kind of much weaker than they may be. So the contrast was huge.
Yeah. Now, one funny thing about her wandering is we saw on Thursday night's episode where she realized some people were still up and out in the backyard. And so she purposely went out there claiming to have to go to the bathroom, looks around, looks at them, comes back in with whoever else was in her room with her and says, oh, they're not doing anything. They're just a bunch of leftovers. And it's just I mean, that was amazing, first of all, that she would call them that. But
great setup.
But again, the one time that she should have been paying attention when she was doing her wandering and she dismissed them.
Yeah, I think she underestimated the ability of these other players to come together and actually play a strong game. And when she's like, this game's way too easy, because she underestimated all these other players in this house, thinking that she had it done set.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we can move to the third rule, which talks about the need to be flexible. Now, I do think Amira was pretty flexible in terms of her strategy, even though she came in with a set plan. You know, as we discussed, she was in a variety of alliances, so she certainly had options. And we heard her talk to others in some of those shared groups about, okay, we can ride both of these alliances until one is more clearly ahead, and then we pick a side. That's a smart thing to do, unless other people find out what you're doing.
Exactly. I mean, she was very flexible in the sense that she wanted to work with, eventually to a point, wanted to use Taylor to her end game to help out certain things. And week two, to get Pooch out. And week three, she wanted to let Taylor go. And she was working with Daniel and Nicole. So she had a lot of operating blocks. I think the issue also was that she seemed a little too flexible to some players in the sense that they didn't really realize they were her number ones. I mean, I think it shows to a point that she didn't even have a complete in-tune touch on who her true allies were when she walked out of the house. She thought it was Daniel and Nicole who turned on who I would argue with would have been one of her stronger allies at that point versus thinking the guy. So I believe the guys also turned on her because they thought she was very close to these girls. She made it very apparent that she was a girl's girl. Mm-hmm. So it seems very interesting that she then relied on the boys' support to be able to go forward in the game. So I think in the point that some of the players viewed her as too flexible.
Yes, yes. All right, well, the fourth rule tells players not to let their emotions control them. How do you think Amira did here?
This is a tough one. I think that...
that's why I asked you. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is a tough one. I'll toss this one to Ovi.
See, I think in the beginning of the game, I think the emotions controlled her way too much. I think that they really signified kind of, we saw whether it was with colorism, whether it was bias, that she was part of the charge. And she also acknowledges she was part of the charge against Taylor. Because I think if she didn't go so hard on Taylor, she wouldn't have been set up to be in this position. Right. Because this is the part where I felt so confusing. She... And some of the other women in the house, they felt they wanted to work with only girls, women, you know, who are all about empowering other women. They felt that Brittany slash Taylor weren't in that forte. So instead of aiming their main focus against the boys, instead of being like, all right, maybe we don't just keep them in, let's actually get out these girls, you know, which I felt like was a weird type of logic. And here's something I want to touch on. And like here, I'm going to bring it up because I had in the interview. This was the interview with Mike Bloom, Parade. In this conversation, she talks about, let's see, he asked who most notably stuck out to you from the Alliance revealed the leftovers, either someone you felt betrayed by or shocked to see in the majority. She goes on to say that Monty and I had a first week of Final Two. And she said that he came to me and said, I want to stand in the end with a woman of color. That's the only way I'm going out. And I think... And this is what I'm talking about. This is a feeling of bonding where you feel, because of your background, you feel close to somebody there. Right. But in the same light, she didn't use that same favor when week one, we saw Terrence and Taylor both on the block. She didn't feel that way when trying to push out Taylor. So this is where I feel like at some point she did let her emotions come, you know, cloud her mind because she talks about logically wanting to work with Monty in the situation because of that bond they have, but also not feeling the same way about Taylor whatsoever. So I think that's where her emotions really clouded her strategic and logical planning.
Yeah. Yeah. And there obviously have been a number of people already this season who have allowed their emotions to take control. And a lot of that has been focused on behavior and actions against Taylor. And, you know, like you said, and like we discussed earlier, Amira was not innocent in that regard either. And we'll discuss more of that in the next rule, but for the purposes of this rule, the key problem is that, like you already said, she allowed her misperceptions of Taylor, her feelings about Taylor, to alter her strategy. And they, you know, like that whole group, they focused so heavily on we must get Taylor out that they missed the big picture.
Exactly. I will say the one thing I felt that when she did try to this week where she tried to rein her emotions in certain situations, start looking at kind of a little bit more game body, game theory wise with, you know, when Daniel went at Taylor for basically saying you're the cause of Paloma going home and you're trying to do that, which is an outrageous thing. And I cannot wait to have the episode about why Daniel loses in the future. But like, I did appreciate that she tried to rein it in for herself and for him. It was saying that I think maybe it was misunderstood. So, I think we did see her be clouded the first 2 weeks, which unfortunately impacted this week three. And this week three, she was trying to rein it in and kind of, hey, hold on, maybe I'm thinking a little too widely than actually what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll go ahead and move into the fifth rule, which tells players they need to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And, you know, as we've been discussing, she was not the worst offender when it came to how Taylor was being treated. But she did play a significant role in starting the storyline of Taylor supposedly being rude and stuck up and that pageant girl and things like that. And she admitted as much in her interviews, acknowledging that stories and hearsay were running wild. And part of the excuse was that a lot of it had to do with things Taylor supposedly said under her breath that could be misinterpreted. I mean, Amira did start to return to reality a bit in her last week. And as she said on the show Thursday, she'd been defending Taylor. She expanded on this in her interviews, specifically telling Sharon Tharp at Us Magazine about defending her after that Daniel blow up and telling Nicole that she didn't mean it that way. Now, I do think one difference is that she was there. She was in the room when Taylor made the comments to Nicole. She saw it as a more objective third party. I think in a lot of the other cases, she either had hearsay or she just misinterpreted something. If she hadn't been there in the room and she had Taylor's word versus Nicole's word, I don't know that she would have taken the same position.
Yeah, I agree. I think that she was in the room. And I also think it's tough in a game where you don't want to, when two people are fighting in this type of game, it's very difficult to speak up a lot of times because you don't want to hinder your game. But I think when you know you already have a little autonomy and clout with Nicole, for instance, I think if Amira did truly feel that way, she could have spoken up in the moment about what's going on in the moment against Daniel, because that matters a lot more than in a private room with Daniel and Nicole in that time, because that would have felt a little bit more on that side. I do think she did try playing nice with both Taylor and Harris, but also I feel like there was a level of this week, I mean, with the lack of scheming and whatnot for her, almost a condom, a pitying, like with Terrence, you know, with the where Nicole was like, all the votes are counted, he's going home. I think Amira kind of took that stance there. So it's a lot easier to be nicer when you're like so confident and you're pitying like that this person. I would be very curious to see what she would have been like if she truly knew her back was against the wall 2 days before it, as how she would have acted. I think the kindness we saw sometimes in certain ways was because she did feel like, I'm on the top of the world, why do I need to like strike low?
Right. Now, she did say in her interviews that she thinks the bullying got out of hand, and she added that, you know, she wished she would have done something about it sooner. You know, we'll just take that as it is. But again, this does not absolve her of what she did earlier. Tooms on Twitter, that's T-O-O-M-S, put together a fairly well-known Big Brother Twitter account, put together a collection of Amira saying some pretty terrible things throughout her time in the game. You know, and it was in response to her saying, oh no, I've been defending her. And this, it was earlier in the game, but again, she was a participant and in some ways a bit of a leader in this regard.
I'll end it this part with, I think when you have somebody who has, they lit a fire, a little match in a dry forest, even if they're making a little fire, a little campfire, but they leave it unattended, it will start a blaze. And a person we hold responsible for that is a person who lit the match. And Amira was one of the match lighters because she put that there and let it blossom. So you can't, you know, you can't justify your action by looking back and saying, I didn't cause the whole forest fire. I didn't make it spread all that way. I just,
and I threw a bucket of water on it.
I threw, it was going there. I called, I called 911 after this place. It's a little too late at that point.
Now I do want to say the reason we bring up this here in this rule is not just to focus on what Amira did wrong on a human level, but to discuss how it impacted her game. Although Amira wasn't, you know, necessarily one of the main people doing the bullying by the time it came, you know, for the veto meeting, we've all, you know, we know who those people were. She was still a part of that group and considered them allies, which of course, put her on the outs with the leftovers. As much as many of us would have loved to see Nicole get put on the block, thinking Taylor was going to be evicted and then blindside the hell out of her, that would have meant Taylor being on the block too. And because of the bullying, Turner didn't want Taylor to have to go through being a nominee again, even in that situation. Because really, could Taylor have trusted them in that situation? Like, hey, just want to let you know you're part of this new alliance, but we're putting you right up on the block. So it had to be someone who was an ally of the bullies, who had participated and was also, part of that alliance. And we discussed more strategic reasons about that already, but this was yet another reason for her to be the target.
Exactly. You put it best, David.
Yeah. Now, do you, her treatment of Taylor, of course, wasn't the only deciding factor. There are plenty of other people in the house. Did you have anything to add in terms of this rule when it came to everyone else?
That's actually a good part, because I think when we think pretend nice in this season, we're like, oh, towards Taylor right now.
Yeah.
In regards to everyone else in the house, I feel like she did play nice, but I feel like here's the thing is that I think they knew the way she acted to Taylor, maybe not to her face, but behind closed doors, other people saw that. The leftovers saw that. Joseph saw that. You know, these players who created leftovers left out Amira on purpose because they didn't really like the trajectory of how she was acting. I mean, Turner noticed the bullying behavior. Like you said, he didn't want to put Taylor / Nicole on the block because he didn't want Taylor on the block. And so Amira was the decision. But if she was nice overall, pretending to be nice to everybody in the house and wasn't bad-mouthing each other outside of game, she wouldn't be in the situation. I think that's what we're talking about. This is why she went home. This part of the rule is because she was unable to keep out factors that weren't pertaining to the game out of her mouth. She just kept talking about those things, and that unfortunately influences it while you're in the house.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, the sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. Over and over again, we heard that Amira was the biggest threat. We've already mentioned it a couple times in other rules. We heard it from the players. We heard it from goodbye messages. We heard it from Julie. We heard it from Amira herself. Now, I will say, sometimes even hearing it that many times doesn't mean it's true. I cannot count the number of Why Blank Lost podcasts I've done where I said, well, they said they were a threat, but they really weren't. But in this case, yeah, it's true. As we discussed in the second rule, she was seen as the puppeteer who flipped the vote against Pooch and who was also running the Women's Alliance while excluding Taylor and Brittany. The guys in Pose Pack knew some of the things she was doing there as well, found out about the other alliances. With all those connections, she was definitely seen as a threat.
Exactly. I think it was very apparent that by week three, she was the glue that held the Women Alliance together. She was the glue that kind of held Nicole, who was also to Daniel, connected to Alyssa, to Indy. If you take out Amira, you take out that full structure. And then each of the men have a certain individual relationship with the girls, and they can kind of foster that through. Versus Amira, they felt that there was no breaking that. So she ended up being the biggest threat level. And she didn't hide it. She was very proud of being such a strong player in the house, and to the point where she always says, like, why is this game not harder? Well,
yeah,
because you at this point were running the house and you were letting everyone else see it for a short time. And you were letting people know that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We can move on to the seventh rule, which says to trust almost nobody. And Amira definitely had a skewed idea of who was trustworthy and loyal to her. When Julie asked who Amira thought had turned on her, her first guess was Nicole and Daniel. And she was confused when she saw who it really was. She was certain that she had, some specific people locked in and never got a whiff of what was really going on. She told Mike Bloom she was shocked to see Monty, Kyle, and Michael in the leftovers because she really trusted them. And then she added to Dalton Ross that she put all her balls in the basket of trusting people that were in that alliance.
She also had a big issue with trusting people in her alliance to make sure that she was safe, a.k.a. Alyssa, who spilled basically everything to Kyle, which made him realize that, wait, I'm not part of the alliance that you guys are talking about and other people aren't. Prompting him, Joseph, and others to start the leftovers who were left out of this major alliance. Amira trusted basically everyone in the house in a way that she thought they would have the best interest for her game. She didn't have a backup plan, and that was the issue. She went full on with her plans and expected people to kind of fall in line where she wanted to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And unfortunately, she voted out the weak last week. Yeah. And the strong got voted out this week.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to what you said, you know, that it's like she believed she was the only one playing the game. Mm-hmm. And so I have my alliance, or these people are in my alliance, so I can trust them, even though I'm in five different alliances. And it's like, if you're in multiple alliances, and therefore, you yourself are not trustworthy. Why are you not putting yourself in their position and realizing the other people are playing a game as well? They may not be trustworthy either. And with Alyssa, it wasn't even malice. It wasn't strategic. It was, I'm goo-goo eyes over Kyle, and I just want to tell him things. Yeah. You know, and so, she wasn't being loyal to the people in her alliances, but she expected the other people in her alliances to be loyal to her.
Exactly. And I think it was misplaced trust in trusting in Nicole and Daniel so much that she became basically tied to the hip to them when she could also see their bad action behaviors were going through the house. Like, there is no, regardless of if you feel Daniel justified or not from her perspective of yelling at Taylor, which she did and no one else did out here. Mm-hmm. But there's no form of good gameplay where that comes out of them. There's no good gameplay from Nicole basically crying because she doesn't want to throw the game and then blaming Taylor for saying something she never did say. You're seeing your allies who you're trusting with so much information implode in week three. And at this point, you don't back off that. You don't, you try to mitigate that, but instead of that, you full on go towards it. So I think that was her issue, that she was really trusting these players who really aren't very good game players.
Yeah. Yeah. It just occurred to me how we should have started the podcast. It's a little late now. I should have started by saying, hey, Ovi, I know you're really busy and I know you're emotional. So if you don't worry about me, if you can't do the podcast, just don't do it. And then just have you explode and throw things around the room.
David wants me to leave the podcast. Yeah. Our JP family. He wants me to leave, but we're not leaving. We're not leaving.
Not in your nature.
Not in my nature to quit.
You have too much integrity.
You need delays. And as you break out delays, start.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I'm so happy that the production team really edited just like the way of how stupid it was to say, like, Taylor wants us to, she's like plotting her down and cut to Taylor. Like, I really hope she's really good. Like, regardless of game, I hope she's okay because it really hurts.
The amazing part was they didn't even have to edit those together. They were literally happening at the same time.
Same time. Taylor was like, do you think we could pray for her? Because she was caring about her in there. And at the same time, Nicole's like crying over, I have to throw this thing at her. Like,
and Daniel's like, she's not even a good person.
She's horrible. She's the reason why Paloma went home.
Yeah.
It's not why they went home, but their actions impacted why Amira went home, because she was so tied to them and into this rule 7, basically she trusted them way too much.
Yeah. By the way, I also, I have an impression. I don't often do impressions.
Oh, I love
impression. I have an impression. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to do an impression of Nicole. You ready?
Okay.
And that's great podcasting. I just realized, for those of you who are not watching the video, that was me sitting here staring slack jawed into space. Sorry for the listeners for that.
No, phenomenal one. That's why the listeners need to come over to YouTube after they listen to it on anything else. So
yeah, just to get that impression. Yes.
Yes.
All right. With that, I'd say it's about time to wrap things up. What are your final thoughts about Amira?
I think Amira is a very intelligent, smart woman who unfortunately led week one, week two biases cloud her rest of her gameplay. She was a really strong game player. She had actually a great pathway to get far into this game, but because of people she trusted, the actions she did in the house, and her inability to kind of let her emotions not work against her, when it came to Taylor, ended up being the reason why Amira went home.
Yeah. Yeah. As fans, many of us wondered why Turner didn't nominate one of the biggest bullies rather than targeting Amira. That's one of the comments I'm getting over and over again on my TikToks about the last few days. And while I already discussed a major reason for leaving Nicole out of it, there were a number of other complicating factors as well. But it also goes back to what originally brought the guys together, even before they formed the Leftovers, when they were just the Pound in those few hours. And that was figuring out who flipped the vote on Pooch. They determined the person most responsible was Amira. Now, you and I determined last week the person most responsible was Pooch. But other than Pooch, the person most responsible appeared to be Amira. She had created multiple alliances, appeared to be pulling the strings throughout the house, hovered over everyone, interrogated those who dared speak with outsiders like Taylor. This had the double effect of showing she was the lead person and also that she was among those mistreating Taylor, the two things that really brought the Leftovers together. Yes, other people have been worse human beings than Amira in this house, no doubt. But as we discussed, she was not innocent in that regard. More importantly for this particular vote was that she was aligned with the worst of the worst and was, in effect, their leader. Taking her out was just the first step of the plan, but the Leftovers wanted to get rid of the puppeteer right away. I'm sure she feels somewhat proud that she was considered such a threat. But being seen that way in only the third week means you didn't do a good enough job of keeping yourself safe. Turns out the game wasn't as easy as Amira thought it was. She overplayed and stood out far too much. And that is why Amira lost.
Wonderfully put.
All right. Well, before we wrap things up here, let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed are available in poster and t-shirt and mug form and anything else you want. Well, I won't say that. A lot of other things. Go to robhasawebsite.com/yxlostfeed.
Yes. And also don't forget that both of us are very active on multiple different social media platforms where we discuss Big Brother and a number of other topics. On Twitter, I am at the Obi Kabir and David is at David Bloomberg. Pretty simple, first and last name. We are both on TikTok, where I am Basmati Boy, and David is, again, David_Bloomberg. Lately, David has been posting, an average of 2 videos, I think, every day?
Yep.
And including a 2-minute mini on why blank lost for Survivor South Africa and plenty of Big Brother videos. So make sure to check those out because you can see all of that right there. And finally, we're both on Instagram. David is at David E. Bloomberg there. And he copies his videos from TikTok over to Instagram if you want to see those on the platform and kind of engage with both of us. I'm at Obi Kabir, where I really just post about my corgi, post about Big Brother. And if you DM me on Instagram, I make sure to reply and talk about Big Brother and things like that. Please let us know where you're watching this from into the or where you came from, whether you saw this on TikTok, Twitter, or wherever it may be on the YouTube comments. Let us know what you liked, why you think Amira went home, and if there's anything that we didn't cover, let us know about it. And finally, the one thing I want to know about, actually, I need to get a poll about this. I'm growing at the mustache right here, so I need to know whether we keep this for Why Blank Lost episode week 4 or we shave it. Hannah over there's trying to get me to shave it. But I said, for the RHAP family, I'm going to try it out once. If you guys like it, we'll keep it. If not, no. But that's everything from my end right there.
Yeah, I'm sure the listeners will have a lot to say about that. You know, but even the viewers, I got to say, it's hard to see in the screen. Maybe you need more light on it. You need to shine.
Okay. Just a little closer.
There we go.
It's still a work in progress. Yeah. I don't grow much facial hair whatsoever, unfortunately. But
yeah, my wife has been trying to get me to shave a beard for 2.5 years now. So
it's a good look.
Thank you.
Give me a little bit. Just send me some, please.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhaswebsite.com/patron. You can get access to all the various extra Big Brother stuff, like the Big Brother Q&A with Rob and Taryn. You get live access to Big Brother alumni interviews. There's the slop, which is the non-strategic, we'll say, aspect of Big Brother. Those are, patron exclusives. They're excuses to become a patron. There we go. And even when Rob isn't talking directly to everyone, there are the Facebook groups and Discord to keep you occupied with a great community of people, including me, where you could talk about Big Brother, Survivor, life in general. So you could support shows like ours and everything on the network by becoming a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron, or click on the link at our robhasawebsite.com/yxlostfeed page. Also, make sure that you're subscribed to all the RHAP podcasts, again, by going to our YX Lost feed page. You'll find great content like the daily live feed updates, Big Brother Stock Watch, and much more. Another podcast you should look into is A Perfect Match, a Married at First Sight podcast on RHAP. Co-hosts Asia Welch and Jason Reed are back to discuss season 15. I cannot believe there are 15 seasons of Married at First Sight. But Asia and Jason discuss each episode weekly with humor and a healthy dose of skepticism. Married at First Sight is about strangers trusting a group of experts to find their spouse. 10 brave singles meet their spouse at the altar, creating 5 couples that will go on an 8-week journey through the wedding, honeymoons, living together, and then finally decision day, where they will decide to stay married or get divorced.
That's wild.
Yeah. There's drama, comedy, love, and everything in between. Whether you watch the show or not, Asia and Jason will hold your hand through it all with amazing guests along the way. And you can subscribe to their feed specifically at robhasawebsite.com/firstsightfeed, or again, subscribe to all the reality TV wrap-ups. Have you seen Married at First Sight?
I have not, but after that intro of it, I will be sure to catch it.
All right. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre for the editing done on this podcast, and to Will from America for the theme song. And thanks, of course, to you, Ovi, for once again joining me. I do have to say, this past week overall has certainly been more fun to watch and talk about than the first couple.
100%. I mean, this has been a role reversal of a season. I've had a great time joining you, David. I can't wait to go into week 4 of Why Blank Lost. And thank you so much to RHAP family for viewing in, listening wherever you may be. And stay with us till next week.
That's right. We will see everyone next week. Bye.
Take care.
This is Why Blank Lost. And this is Why Blank Lost. Oh, baby, this is Why Blank Lost.